Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Dabi Bumbumasilena. I'm from Eastern Cape. I'm going to take you through our comments on the issues raised in the bill. I'm not doing anything wrong, so. And the UBT as a press. The outline of the presentation is specific about the report issues, the regulatory environment, and some recommendations that we'd like to make, and share with you some of our observations with the issues raised in this piece of legislation. Sharon, you have to move from your things. I can see out of 10 in terms of the breakdown, basically when we're looking at the ripple effect that we had when the regulations were announced, and there were a number of things that opened up some floodgates for unintended purposes. But basically, I think our interest in all this has been that we think it's important for municipalities to attract skilled and competent managers and staff generally to drive the strategic thrust of the municipality. We also say that there's limited regulatory framework now, but I think that should be added a little bit. That's described as the recruitment processes to clarify some of the organization. I'll explain that later, Chairperson. We've had a number of fights with our honourable colleagues from SAGA around the issue of competency assessment. And I think we're just coming from the position of saying, even when you want to go to national or provincial government, you still require to do a competency assessment. And there was that misunderstanding. There also was the issue of the long reach in attracting the skills, the issue of advertising nationally in newspapers so that you attract the pool of skilled people. The educational qualification to be streamlined. I think we are increasingly seeing people asking for the minister's coordination in terms of the educational qualification. However, in some of these areas, there are serious challenges of the size of the municipality and the budget that they then have in terms of the restraints that we in the regulation. However, some of the challenges that we experience is that if a municipality, a smaller municipality, for example, would like to attract services of an engineer, and their budget only allows them to get a technical guy who is not a huge help with the technical definition, but somebody with a technical qualification rather than getting an engineer. The worry in that case, I think that we need the legislation to look at, or the regulations to look at it, whether or not we are actually adding value with that process in a rural municipality that never had any municipal services, that will be starting with infrastructure from scratch. That becomes a challenge in the sense that you need somebody who understands the ISO number, whatever, understands the standards that are required in putting pipes and doing roads and doing all those kinds of things. And therefore, we need to be looking at what the circumstances, the situation is. You may have that requirement in the metro because there's a lot of engineers, but in the municipality that really is starting processes from scratch to prevent the matter where 1319 of July is implemented and they lose money because they just do not have the right skills to do the right thing. The job descriptions and the responsibilities, I think for the section 56 and 57, we need to standardize the job descriptions because the responsibility and the functions of the municipalities are the same. And then the panel that assesses the interviews and the recruitment process of the municipal managers needs also to be explained in detail, and the roles and responsibilities in a panel. Because sometimes there's a perception that if you're coming from this department and you're sitting in the panel, you're just observing, you cannot advise, you cannot actually make any input into the process. The issue that was contained, Chairperson, which is the holding political office, I think there's divergent views on this matter coming from different quarters, even from where I come from. But there is some value in precluding the political office for people that are going to be servicing in municipality to address the issues of conflict of interest, the perception that communities are going to have because you come from this particular party that represents the interests of the party. We believe, therefore, that service delivery is nonpartisan, and therefore, for objectivity, the membership of parties can be just allowed to just membership at all the offices. I think it's something that we want to be part of the party and the pros and cons. The lack of role separation is a challenge. We think there could be instances where the judgment can be clouded by the role that the person, the dual role that the person is holding, and therefore we're playing or putting more emphasis on objectivity. The next issue for us that we'd like to have looked at is the secondments. We usually have places where, in terms of the existing law, the municipality can ask an entity to secondment somebody. There are a number of cons in this matter, in the sense that, firstly, because we have limited capacity in the department due to the number of municipalities and the problems that they have, we therefore end up getting into costly exercise of finding somebody who's going to be filling that position from the database that we keep for intervention. But secondly, it's an unplanned exercise. So even if we do not find somebody external, we send somebody in tender, excuse me, we still have to go bear the cost that we did not budget for due to the unplanned nature. But we're also experiencing an increasing number of these requests, which means we may end up without senior managers in the department when we need to circle all of them to these areas. And the second one is the issue of the welcome. Why are the requests which have been, in most cases, these people are met with hostility at municipal level. It may be council resolution that says we request the entity to send somebody, but the people that you have to work with become hostile, and it becomes very difficult to work because they will fall in polishing, they sabotage, they will do things that they're supposed to be doing. And I think there should be some guidelines to council in terms of how do they manage that process when they assist, they're asking for somebody to assist them. There's also the issue of if you send one person to go to an inspired environment who is not the normal MM or the normal person, they get exposed to a whole lot of things, and therefore you need to give them some sort of backup, which is what then increases the cost of this person being able to operate and perform the functions that they are asked to perform, so that there's reports, there's monitoring, there's all the things. This one person cannot do everything that an MM does, getting support from other people, and they do not have the support. But it also eats into the capacity of the department. Municipalities have challenges every day, and we need to have people going there to intervene from time to time. So if we are putting somebody on a supplement or on a loan to a municipality, it means our own capacity therefore is affected significantly. The proposal that we were saying that I think it would be quite efficient if the corporate department is centralized and the districts are fully capacitated to support on an ongoing basis without due hands-on, without actually having to go in and start in that process. So we basically proposing that as Hawkeye National is looking at the structure of the provincial departments, we also have to look at how the functions that are requested from the departments are captured and addressed on an ongoing basis. The next issue was the issue of concurrence in the recruitment. The issue of concurrence is just mentioned, but I think there has to be a very deliberate in the regulations, deliberate section in the regulation that says what that type of concurrence should be achieving. This will allow the agency therefore the latitude to run the reference checks if they should be any information that is coming that is saying there was insufficient reference check that was done on certain people. So currently you have the concurrence being requested after a person has already been appointed. So even if you come back and say, no, but this person, there are challenges in appointing this person, already the labor relations kicks in, the person goes to court, and they have to be paid because they already have a letter, you can't then dismiss them. We find that there is therefore the malicious concurrence, and that is not actually serving the purpose it was intended to do. The time frames are critical, and we find that as soon as the 90 days of not filling the post of the senior manager in the municipality lasted, then they come to the agency and request for a secondment. And I think there should be some ways of making sure that there are consequences of not really filling 90 days. I'm not sure what we can say, because sometimes if the issue where they advertise, they don't find the right candidate for the job, and they have to go back again and re-advertise, and therefore the 90 days last. There should be a way that that's going to be monitored and resolved to make sure that before the administrative processes that could not be finished because of the processes that are involved. The savings, basically, we sometimes look at it as the savings by not giving the co-savings, the care savings. And sometimes when they ask you for somebody and you want to put a person from external, there's still an expectation that COPS is going to pay that person who is going to be acting in that capacity. And that is problematic because these are some of the unplanned and unbudgeted for activities. And we insist that the municipality use their savings to pay for the people that we are providing to support and act in that capacity. The other issue that is a bit problematic, Chairperson, is the bi-cultural agreements, and I think SALGA is going to give some light into them. There's the growing tendency of not paying the award that comes from the bi-cultural agreements, and they lead to litigation. That litigation becomes protracted and it eats into the budget of the municipality. We then think that there should be regulations that have specific time frames to prevent financial burden and financial irregularity for municipalities who don't pay. Already a number of municipalities have budget structures and therefore they cannot afford to have interest paid because they ignored the awards from the bargaining council and people go to court to force them to pay for that. Chairperson, we also look at Section 150. That's a very difficult area that needs specific step-by-step requirements and regulatory time frames and processes. As of now, it basically says that they feel suspect that something should investigate. The investigations are costly, and sometimes they just take a lot of time, getting people not responding, people not cooperating, and information not being given. And the time that the people who do the investigation put in there is just quite long and costly, because when they go there and look at everything, there's still money that needs to be paid. And when they finish, also the legislation says that the agency needs to give the council the recommendations to implement, and none of those recommendations ever get to be implemented. So it's a cost factor for the department, but then it doesn't get anywhere. And if the MC doesn't have teeth, then it means there is no way that this process can go anywhere. The reports just get shoved somewhere and they never acted upon. Thank you, Chairperson. Those were the areas that we were concerned about in the legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
You want to engage this position now?
Ah, no.
This is
a
free
question.
Whatever
it is.
You want to engage this position now?
No.
System
now,
or change? Good. And can I follow you this
one? This
you can write a report on the computer, right?
Yeah.
We must proceed with the COP International. Don't look at me.
There is a problem that needs to be addressed is a situation of a chicken and egg. Capitalism, is a situation of a chicken and egg. So that's why the officials and especially the legal department must help us for this process. Because when you go to the presentation on page 4, holding political office, the Eastern Cape is saying that yes, because that was the bone of contention when it comes to the court judgment, to say that some was put us to court on the basis that managers must be allowed to be holding some political offices. I think that is the main issue. And here we are saying that as long as there is no conflict of interest. But how can you, in a practical way, how can that one be prevented now? We belong to the EFF, we are known. That's why OBSA in the central command team of EFF. But you have an honors or you have a master's in public administration, you apply as a South African citizen. And then now the ANC or the IEC or whatever political party saying, no, but this one we know is not a political party. So actually you must find a very specific way in order for this amendment to find the resonate with the Constitution, and the Constitutional Court must not also deal with that. I agree on the secondment of this convention on 18th. I agree with the proposal here, with your points that you are putting in. Costly exercise for vast provinces to understand nature. It makes working very difficult in mobility. That's where they were to strengthen the laws and regulations. Because when you speak about mobility, you can't allow an individual who just wants to, deal with the department, and it will also have its effect on the service delivery because of the selfish reason. Now we are no longer in that managerial position, but you don't want to give the information that needs to be given. When you say that it eats into the department capacity, I think we must also rework the issue of the capacity from national to provinces, because if the departments are not capacitated enough as departments, that's where problems start. That's where we talk about going outside and get people with skills in a form of consulting, and as a result, in a very, very costly way as a department. But I think this issue does not lie with the departments at a provincial level. It must also be a program on its own provincial department. Again, here on page 7, HOD of the Intake, we're saying bargaining council agreement, the regulations to be tightened, that puts financial balance. You were just throwing with me to say the regulations to be tightened. How? Just give us practical proposals in order for us to have a report. Thank you very much, Chief. That is my contribution and incentive. I know that you are from the state, and you are very sympathetic.
No, I'm from South Africa.
This is, in fact, Chair, it's quietly happening in the stage.
Not space.
Baby is my first name. Lest I be confused for me, but I... Chair, when interacting with the presentation from Eastern Cape, I also encountered the same challenge that it is not clearly outlined what is it that they are proposing. Before I comment, if you were to look at the presentation from the OPO, it is very clear there is an amendment. There's an input and there's a motivation. For example, the issue of political position. Then there is an unequivocal that this action should be deleted, it should not be applicable. The motivation, the amendment is against the provision of F108 of 96 in our constitution, which enshrines that every citizen is free to make political claims. So, for us, engaging with the input, we know exactly what the input and the motivation are. So when it comes to the present from the center, it is not giving us the real sense of what the intervention is in. Yeah, it's a skeleton without a flesh. So it would be ideal if the can at least restructure their input to an extent where we can be able to extract the amendments. Because we don't want to lose public participation to the other malicious concurrent exercise. But Chair, in engaging with the input on the issue of educational qualification to be streamlined, I did not quite get clear whether you are implying that for rural municipalities, instead of applying the same qualification as urban municipalities, we should have different qualifications given the nature and the circumstances in which rural municipalities exist, that it's extremely difficult to attract the skills that you would normally get in urban areas. Was that what you're trying to put across? Can I just get clarity before I continue with my engagement check for you on the issue of educational
assistance? Thank you, Chair President. I'm just saying that the municipality, in municipalities and the municipalities, whether it's a small or a bigger municipality, the engineer is an engineer. So we shouldn't have the specific things. Yes, there's a difficulty in getting those qualifications and those skills in rural municipalities. But instead of lowering the standards, we should find another mechanism that we put in the regulations on how we provinces and the national assist the municipalities. Because it's issues of budget, it's issues of inability to attract those people. We then need to be finding ways of how do we intervene to find the right people who are going to do the right jobs that they are putting for instead of allowing them to get the coordination of getting the least qualified people.
No, thanks. Then in that regard, I fully concur with Eastern Cape. I was a bit worried because it was unclear on the presentation. But if that's the case, then I fully concur. On the issue of concurrence, yes, I also want to agree that perhaps the issue of concurrence shouldn't be done after the appointment. Once the councils have resolved on the ideal of suitable candidates, I think as part of the final step, it should then be that the provinces do the concurrence, rather than the municipality issuing appointment letters and then the concurrent later come and identify candidates. I mean, in that aspect, in that regard, we agree with the proposal. But it needs to be, like I said, crafted in such a manner that we capture the essence of their input so that it is reflected accordingly in the amendment. The issue of political, calling a political office, I think indeed it borders in the right of individual persons' rights in the Constitution. Because one would normally tend to accept or assume that not only a professional you uphold the basis and stand in the king for, but you would be, whatever position that you would be in, they are expected to act independently and impartial, especially as a professional. So there's suggestion that sticks to suggest that once you are a political office bearer, you cease to become an independent and impartial in your line of profession. does that something out of us as political as a team, that I would hold a BCom degree or an engineering degree, then when I'm expected or supposed to perform my roles and responsibilities in line with my profession, I'm no longer independent. I am someone micromanage or control someone. I think in that aspect we need to clearly and check whether or not are we not infringing on the rights. There has to be ways and means in which we avoid political or historical interfering in administration. But to exclude people on the basis of the office they hold in political parties, yet they are competent, they possess the requisite skills, yet we'll be trying of scarce skills in our municipality, I think we are limiting ourselves to. Thank you.
And then you get
the technical people and the managers and directors generally and so forth. Political loyalty can be a consideration in the single support spot, but it's not in the operations of the public service or the military service. It's crucially important that we get this event of truth, because the delay has probably caused a lot of trouble that's still to deal with. I wouldn't want to stack all sorts of things that haven't been thought of at this point. But I think this prohibition on political office bearers and senior managers in this country is a very, very important constitutional function. It's not just about one political party, it's about this project of creating an independent political impartial civil service for the political party. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning all. My question is on page 5 of Settlement of Informal Nature. This is a great and very important point today of sabotage when there is a second issue done. And in both cases or instances, usually, I also think that the role of one is not intervention. When providing things and providing the strategy, and we find out there is no cooperation at all in terms of giving the teams that have the information. As a result, when the team left the institution, you will find out that the strategy go back to square one. It will have that disclaimer. So, there is a proposal there saying that maybe it's centralizing tickets to a teaching study level. But my problem is that the same can happen if there are no street levels that are in place. Even the experience that the provincial government is experiencing in terms of the resources that become whatever. I don't know what is that Eastern Cape is advising on how, even if it's not the same case, because really, really, these interventions are not sufficient. I don't know whether it's level supervision or whatever, or this sabotage, which has been mentioned here. Again, the issue of the Section 101 of the legislation. Truly speaking, the experience is telling us there will be investigation and investigation that is happening in all the first countries throughout South Africa. But the result implementation of the whether it's from SIU or whatever investigation, there is no implementation at all. But the MNR, it's very clear. We cannot do the same. So then, what is it that can be done here to avoid recurrence? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think that on the issue of political service delivery on page 4, service delivery non-partisan, and therefore objective is membership of parties can be allowed. So on that page, we get these problems mainly because of the culture of allegiance with one parties in the place of professionalism and excellence. In that case, because had we based our appointments of officials on the outcomes of what they should be charged on, than political affiliation. Prioritizing political affairs, I think that we would have achieved to not have disclaimers after disclaimers. That's number one. Number two, we have seen the tampering on service delivery. And I do not know, the Deputy Minister, how are we going to address this? Because our people have experienced such things at the municipality. Even people that have qualifications are bad. I know some people, I have some data of some people that have not, and that have lost hope in the municipality in terms of them being employed. Either from not having the municipal membership card and so forth, or forced to have a political membership card of a particular political party, than what their qualifications are. I think that people can address that will be having somewhere in the country and will be having somewhere in terms of service delivery and will be having somewhere in terms of attracting necessary skills, but not just attracting necessary skills, but attracting genuine people, you know, people that would bring value to those municipalities. And so that is the case in terms of that. In terms of the impact, I concur with my colleague here. In terms of the impact, is it okay? Impact has to fight. We have succeeded such over and over again, and I think that it's time now that they really get convinced that they should have some kind of independence or a balance of political parties in that space, because you have a small one that has to get necessary reports from that body, but that body does not have to act on, and yet my spouses are independent, so we are told that they are independent, and they can't be independent enough. They are selective when it comes to them being strong in health capacity in the same way that forward holding the ability to come. And secondly, I wanted to ask you a question lastly. How are you striking the balance between rural and urban municipalities in terms of attracting the same skills that often found in metros as a result of the importance of skills as a result the rurality and the capacity of those municipalities? Do we keep the municipality state of rurality rural? Do we just keep them rural like that? Or do we strike the balance or build capacity so that the similar capacity as that of the urban areas, so that you don't get people that are increasing there to move from there to find a sort of that is running away from the rural areas? You see, because we've got people there that were born there, right? That are quite competent, you know. But they move as a result of the capacity and as a result of allegiance to political money. Because people don't necessarily want to be politicians or members of political parties in order for them. They just go to school to acquire skills, you know, so that they can work genuinely and enter that big position, right? And they want to prove their capacity and they want to improve themselves. Now, if they run away as a result of the capacity of the rural areas and the rural areas of this state and the urban areas, surely they will be a concern. So I will start the line. Thank you very much.
Thank you. by the recent human crisis. But here, they mentioned things that it's very important for them to attract skills and competent municipal managers. But the first one talked about the municipal managers on the official and in general. I think they need certain qualifications. That is very much important. But for us also to avoid the disclaimer, maybe we need to find a processing mechanism of capacitating municipal managers and the officials under the sea. Because sometimes we find out that they appoint the municipal manager, then there is also somebody who will come and assess them. Are those people who assess them have the certain qualifications on today maybe and five? Because also, as of now, municipalities get paid less money while we are getting a municipal minister, while we are also getting the people that are assisting them. Didn't they have any indication that there is something wrong here? I think maybe if we can also talk about the issue of the consistent management, things things fall apart while they are there. What is wrong? And then maybe even if we can regulate them, how can the entire? So we need to come up with this strategic way of keeping advancing and good development so that we can move forward. And also, the people, are we using the correct model or the format of assisting them? If not, we trust the people that are responsible, like them all. We need to come up with something that we can help them to do well. Because the failure of no consequence management, this is the problem of the municipality. So we keep on advancing them to certain, potential processes. I think that's something we will do well.
That's why I mentioned that good is yay, because they didn't outline their recommendations.
What is it that needs to be done for them? Because it is them that are looking to give them responsibility. Isn't they see there is a problem here? This is how we can solve this problem. So that when their ideas and our ideas get together, then we can move forward.
Inexperienced, unqualified individuals for key positions.
I thought that was a challenge. Now, when you have criteria in place which gives you minimum requirements for a person to even be shortlisted or considered for a position, that limits some of these issues that relate to political inability. Because you would look into the relevant skills. Does this person possess a relevant skill expertise? Has this person acquired enough experience? Does he or she have a proven track record from the previous employer? Then if that individual possesses such because he or she holds a political office, is that person therefore excluded from being shortlisted or considered for that particular position? Because like I indicated earlier, I have got perhaps the challenge here, or that we used to take every judge in key and very serious position without including. So I would like to get an understanding as then of whether or not in the instance where we are limited or we are running short of people who possess certain critical skills, particularly to rural municipalities, in an event where you have one or two positions and then people within that particular area, yes, they hold certain political office, those people will be excluded on the basis of their affiliation to the position they hold. And whether or not they give just an ordinary supporter of a certain political party, that is to suggest that I'm immune from being micromanaged or given instruction somewhere else. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would also like to advance before you get in. One of the members and the colleagues, I invite you to that you can stand up and sit in and push that on the side. I'm not condoning a session, but I'm saying you bear to sit and you go. Over to you, Honorable President.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is just a quick comment on what I think about the emphasis of what Honorable President said. In terms of municipal manager, as well as affecting municipal manager, the duty and the responsibility in terms of what they tell us and what they can do. The Executive Business Act, as well, it says the municipality has three components. One is the councillors, two is smart administration, and three is part of the community. That's the three parts of which a municipality is comprised of. That municipal manager, as well as the acting municipal manager, can combine all three of those parts to a legal binding contract. Therefore, in terms of the SLA, and that sort of stuff. So if you do get the responsibility of a municipal manager, it then they must be qualified. Yes, they must be objective. They must not be affiliated with any political party, so he doesn't have to drive a certain agenda. If you say in your presentation that there's sabotage, or especially when they want to apply the law, well, they were spotted. I also advise in progress that the experience that we need to do a forensic investigation in terms of municipality. If so that is the fact, then there must be things going on in that municipality if they do not want to allow you to apply the law. The law is quite straight on the responsibility, especially on acting responsibility as well, to say what has to be done as well. It cannot be done. I think in terms of that, if that is the case, then as any province, we must probably look into a full investigation. I myself was a councillor for 8 years, and the most problems we have really sit in terms of acting municipal manager is they usually appoint an acting municipal manager just to get some contracts through, because the municipal manager doesn't want to sign one. Then he goes on leave for a month, and then he gets contracts through. So all of this is not only, how can I say, it's not hostility. ideally has that if the hostility has that it puts somebody positive in something nice. That's where they start. So
thank you very much.
Oh,
my goodness, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hello, the comment. Like I said, Chairperson, I apologize for a legal manager. He was the one who was sending the input. I'm going to check with him and finish it or maybe everything is sent to the communication itself. The Honorable Overman talked about the capacitation of MPEG. This is the area that I think that we have been focusing on. There's been a lot of training. We have a very comprehensive training that we do with the University of Rome on MPEG. And obviously, we need to, from time to time, measure whether or not we're getting the right impact from that. On the skills attraction, I think I've explained that we are concerned that the budget then ends up limiting the level of people, whether they need a higher capacity level. The issue of, and I think whatever members are more interested in the issue of the political office, we cautious because we're saying just because you hold political office, what if you have the skills? Should we discard you with the skills that we need? What if you're an engineer? We need an engineer in the political office. And we're saying consideration needs to be taken on how to deal with that issue. That's why we're just throwing it away. We're saying there's a lot of work that needs to be done looking at that. Because then you lose the ability to do the right thing. It's in case, as one of the women was saying, it's one of those areas that are basically drained of skills that go to pay themselves housing and in case. However, at the same time, there are a lot of university graduates that are unemployed each year. So I think it's an issue of what are the combinations of factors that we can put in place to make sure that we have, we for example, we have been, one of the members was Honorable John was asking what are we doing to assist. We have a PMU now in collaboration with the CBC, and they're going to be bringing in private sector engineers into the board. We are hoping that through the 5 years that we're going to be having this partnership, we should be able to get as many as possible engineers, planners, and the critical skills in local government registered professionally and be able to. For those that don't want to go, sometimes people go to something and they still don't find jobs, and then it's a transition cycle. So we're going to try and qualify and register as many engineers and planners as we can, so that we can then have that support that we need to do. So the issue of political office for us is that you don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater out. We need to consider it very carefully. The issue of urban versus rural, I don't think we take the issue of urban versus rural, but it's a preference that people have. And I think it's something that over time is a better way to look at. In health and education, they have rural analysis. But we're not saying that people should be motivated by money to go to those areas. Because service delivery is required more in the rural areas because it can never be made before. But if it works for other sectors, I think it's something that we need to look at and we need to consider and see. If we find engineers that are willing to go there because they have the capacity, we can. If we find planners who want to go to the rural municipalities and they can take the rural allowance, maybe we can motivate with our national department to make a motivation for them. However, in terms of our support, as Honorable Solomon was saying, the district
I was referring to is our district offices, which are now going to be closer to the municipalities and provide a district level of municipality level support. So we're looking at capacitating that element so that we don't go out looking for people to send to municipality, but we send the people who work with them on a day-to-day basis who are familiar with that environment and that municipality. The concurrence we are just proposing that we need to strengthen the regulations around, you know, when to appoint and when to appoint post that concurrence that we have. I think I've appeared with the political issues. Honorable Maka was asking the decentralization. When we're not talking about the district, we're talking about our own offices in the district that are going to give the support. The question was asked by Honorable Sarisa. It doesn't mean that people don't have skills and capacity. I think the recruitment interest in shortlist in the interview process basically looks at those processes. However, the issue of impact is that politically, they have two bites, and there is a lot of capacity that's been given to the impact. Like I said, we have our own processes going. SAWRA has another process of training the impact. Generally, the CTAs are training the impact. Private sector is more interested in training the impact. So, and our training, for example, is in partnership with private sector to make sure that we give them teeth and we strengthen that. We do believe that if they are strengthened, they would deal with the issue. Some cases, the issue of irregular expenditure, some of those things can be dealt with by the impact and be resolved and clear. But they sit in the municipality with the expenditure and give very profile from that experience. The capacitation of municipal staff is an ongoing process. It is undertaken by provinces, national, SAWRA, CTAS, so there is an ongoing capacitation process. And therefore, the assessment that Honorable George is talking about is when we do interviews, it's a limited process. We look at the skills, we look at the experience that the person has, we look at the training that they've gone through, and obviously, if we sit in the interviews, we make sure that the person recommended fits the bill of the assets that we said it should be. If it's municipal managers, we need to have a standardized requirement, because the municipal manager is a small municipality, and the municipal manager is a major has the same facilities to run the same system. The balance. Basically, I think in our system, we look at these things as two separate issues. There's intervention. And intervention is where we think there is something going untoward going on in the municipality, and therefore we intervene using the constitutional LFMA and other means. But the appointment is basically making sure that people fit the bill that is regulated. They have the relevant skills, they have the relevant training, they have the relevant number of years experience in the job that they're getting appointed for. In the intervention, most of the time we look for people who previously worked in the sector who go in there and be able to deal with the issues in terms of the regulation. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm interested on the issue of the concurrence. I'd like to get a sense of exactly what you are proposing. Are you saying concurrence should be done prior appointment or after? I'm bringing this, taking into cognizance of what Chapter 7 of the Constitution is saying in terms of power and transfer of municipalities, that national and foreign should not impede on the right of the municipality to exercise its right and perform its functions. So, if I can get an understanding of them, what is your proposal with regards to concurrence? Should it be done before appointment or after?
Honorable Thank you for your response, HOD, but I think that no one has a solution to this political office resolving managers and the scale as you are mentioning, and you're making an example of a particular skill that is required. No one can claim here to have a solution. So now, our premise is to say that there is a court judgment and there is a constitutional right for everyone in this prison to say that you can't take away from that constitutional right. But all of us here, we are required to find solutions to this DM. DM is a DM, belongs to the ANC. But he's a deputy minister now here. So the chairperson who is chairing this meeting is a member of the ANC, but he is chairing the meeting in such a way that all members are also not complaining. So I think we need all of us to apply or to get some solution of some sort. Because let me just make an example of everyone will concur with me to say that there was an issue regarding SATU as IEC staff members. We used to use SATU members as IEC. There was an outcry to say that these people belong to a union that is also affiliated to COSATU, and COSATU, we know that they align with the ANC. When it comes to elections as an opposition party, we said no, but it can't be. To say that you are using a principal or a teacher of a particular school to an IEC person. And this person during the campaign is campaigning for a certain political party. But at the same time, IEC is saying that no, we are not using such people. We are using school teachers. So it's their cultural right to become IEC people. We can't run away from that. But as Honorable Habebe is saying that at the end of the day, what we don't want here, sitting in this table, is to have a problem when it comes to, say, the delivery. That is the bottom line. You can't be the ANC because we know there are critical deployments that are taking place. But as long as departments, as long as provincial departments, as long as everyone will say, okay, now I'm the manager responsible for this municipality or this department, let me wear my cap as a manager now. Even if EFF is coming to complain about certain things, I'm not going to be playing my political game here. I'm going to be ethically correctly so as a manager. So this debate, it won't be. I mean, it's going to be an ongoing debate. I think all of us say this is the way to go. So I think we have done our best, trying all our best, saying that your legal person who was supposed to come and present here put you under the bus, but I think the presentation was well presented. I'm not from the Eastern Cape, I'm also from South Africa.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. I think it's important that we make it clear. The Constitutional Court did not reject this amendment bill in its previous form on substantive grounds. The Constitutional Court made no finding that it is impermissible to limit the political rights of a Section 56 manager or a municipal manager in this case. It was technical grounds. The bill wasn't tagged correctly. The second point is, in that court case, in fact, the concession was made. This is a limitation of political rights. But it is a justifiable limitation of political rights. Very much as you would limit the political rights of a judge sitting on the bench, because there's an important imperative at play here. Now, if you read Section 56A as in its current form, it doesn't prevent a person who holds political office from applying for a job in the municipal administration. It just forces him to make a choice. Are you going to wear the hat of a municipal official, or are you going to wear the hat of a party political office here? In that sense, it's not unfair, because all of us have to make choices. Many of us sitting here have to make choices about our involvement with companies, professions, and so forth. And forcing somebody to make a choice in the interest of service delivery and a professional, independent municipal service that it is a constitutional peril. I really don't see any problematic aspect here. I think we must be very careful not to put words in the mouth of the Constitutional Court on this issue. Thank you.
However, I think the issue of concurrent was put in there to make sure that the appointment could be approved for the tonight and start to check that people who require this entity have complied with the regulation. So I think the issue, therefore, is going to be saying, is the concurrent requirement inhibiting on the part of functions of the municipality? Or is it streamlining with the functioning and the efficiency of the appointment? I think it's something that we need to deal with as we finalize the legislation and the regulations going forward. And to what extent does it impede, to what extent does it facilitate efficiency in this point?
Well, the spirit and the intent of the amendment was to objectively professionalize. Yes, indeed, Honorable Khalid, the old convention was the issue of holding a political office and being an accountable. Now the amendment was to balance the rights enshrined in the Constitution, joined the rights in relation to the Constitution, as well as the intention of how public administration should be professionalized in the government. So that's how this amendment was put into action. You are going to say it was on a technicality, not on an authentic. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Bomboy. Again, in the term that the form was.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the chair and GM on behalf of the president of Sandra.
Okay.
And for the opportunity given to us to once again present on the amendment on the Systems Act. Sure, 1 year ago, on the same date today, COPTA in your records will pick it up that on this date you were summoned to this house and we shared the platform with the Grand Prophet. And it was immediately after the ruling. And we deliberated and expressed the particular views. And such views were views conversed between ourselves and the court. And we agreed that let us focus on this amendment, of which I started the opinion that this court ruling is opening space for COPTA to really look into the municipal system that is intact so that you have municipalities and so on. But ultimately, I think that's fine. therefore as to what the court has said. And we yearn for a moment in the day in which this committee will also summon us and look into the entire system's act. I'm raising this chair because I'm hearing, and I've also heard during the time on the same day a year ago, this issue of concurrence. The critical question that I posed to the committee then at that time, who is the majority? The constitution in terms of South Africa defines government in three legs: the provincial, national, and local government. And each one has a responsibility as enshrined in terms of section 151.2 of the constitution, right? At the amendment. And the deliberate intention, if you read the act properly, that says local government, as it does its work, within 7 days of appointing its duty employee, it must notify the agency's responsibility. And within 14 days, and within certain prescribed periods, must reply. We wish to come back to this debate at one point, because I'm seeing every time it is this subject. And unfortunately, in fact, to me, it's a serious lack of appreciation of what the provisions of the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, in terms of what tries to direct us as a nation to go forward. Nevertheless, that is the issue that we need to address. Chair, the intention of the amendment, it was avoiding micromanagement of municipalities. And if we link it to micromanagement of municipalities by political parties, there's also a possibility of micromanagement of municipalities by various departments. So micromanagement must look at only on one way, the highway. It's not a highway. It's a multiplicity of ways of micromanaging municipalities. For the fact that you want to use that as the powers of the employer body to employ and exercise your responsibility, and your role is then to assist in the provision. So I'm saying, Chair, I hope one day a debate will be opened in this committee to look at this. Micromanagement of the municipal space. And I think in our presentation we'll make a detail. And make an example, for instance, that says appreciate the Constitutional Court sending back this amendment. And then I would say one of the key areas, if you focus to municipal management.
Instructions of the party. So the issue
of professionalization of the local governments here, it become important to us as South African local government association. The other issue that Chair is to deal with the integrity of the process. It is important that I think the president of SANDA raised when we were in the NEC in Durban, that what is a key important matter that we need to focus at is how we create an institution that has integrity, that is responsive on challenges that people are facing without being influenced by political party views and so on and so forth, making sure that the service delivery is rendered to communities of South Africa irrespective of their political information. So, Chair, we'll walk you through on our presentation, and once again, we appreciate the opportunity. I think the President, if she was here, she could have confirmed that. And the last will then walk us through on the detailed presentation that we have prepared for this committee. You will find that it's the same presentation that we did a year ago, with a little bit of hope and wish and change, because change in democracy is more about learning on the previous context, so that we are just for the future.
Thank you very much, and also greetings to members of the committees, as well as the deputy member of the committee. I hope that I've covered those.
Yeah, let me be this way.
The light has still on, so we don't want to be too close. The presentation, Chairperson, that has been circulated, perhaps to just broadly give an overview to members what is entails. Firstly, because we are dealing with a bill that in fact was one that acted as far back as 2011. And there was a context that that informed that at the given time. I am aware that COCTA, in their presentation, would have covered some of these aspects. We would just want to reinforce, certainly, what the problem statement was in 2010. The second part, what we will do is deal specifically, because we hold the view that because the Act was at least implemented from 2011 up to March 2019, the 8 years that it was implemented, there are lessons that could be learned, and we are going to reflect on those lessons in particular, and then present what we have as comments that we are of the view of should be considered as part of reviewing the bill. And then we will make specific recommendations right at the end of the presentation on all of the clauses that appear in the bill. So to deal with the first part, also to confirm, as stated by Councillor Stokely, that Ms. Calder has gone through an extensive consultation process through engagement with municipalities to come to this particular position. And we would also give you specific examples that were given to us by members of some of the challenges that are experienced. We don't want to generalize, but want to just practically present to you some of the challenges our members indicated should be raised specifically as part of our submission. But to start off with on the context, which is the problem statement and what informed why we are where we are, is that in 2009, COCTA came out with a State of Local Government report, and we thought there are five key areas out of that report that are very critical in consideration of this bill. The first conclusion reached by that report is that there's undue interference by councillors in the administration from municipalities. And as a consequence, it impacts negatively on service delivery, or at least hinders service delivery. A second conclusion reached by the report was the concern around the impact of undue political interference, meaning external party interference in the affairs, particularly from a governance point of view in municipalities. The third area is related to senior middle management, where they occupy positions in political parties and use those positions to advance their daily full-time responsibilities in the municipality. We will reflect on that later on. The fourth area is wider party structures that intervene and or interfere in the internal council processes. And lastly, the difficulty that the sector has had that relates to senior managers not meeting minimum qualifications and competency requirements. For us, those five conclusions reached by the 2009 State of Local Government OCLA report remain relevant as we speak, and should also form the basis of consideration of the current amendment before the committee. But more importantly is the local government turnaround strategy of 2010 that recommended key things which we want to reinforce today. The first one is that it would be important that we need to professionalize the sector and ensure that employees, particularly employees at a senior level, subscribe to professional associations similar to what you have in the legal space, similar to what you have in the engineering space, similar to what you have in the accounting space, that they are professional bodies that play a key role around that particular area of expertise. And then lastly, it would be important, as the LGT said, that qualified and skilled staff should be appointed at municipality. Having presented that problem statement that should be informed, that should inform the consideration of the amendments before the committee, we also want to highlight what Councillor Stockton has started touching on, because it is important that we upfront state what the Constitution provides for, because it impacts on our views, particularly on the amendments that are currently on the table. The Constitution in Section 151, 3 and 4 respectively, and specifically provides that municipalities have the right to govern. We want to emphasize this, the right to govern on its own initiative and affairs, and that national and provincial government may not compromise or impede a municipality's ability to exercise those rights and perform those functions. A very important two clauses that we find, the section that we find in the Constitution, and will inform some of the submissions that we will make today. And then reinforcing the point that I think everyone is now agreeing to, that national and provincial governments play a central role as defined by the Constitution to support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities, and we want that to be reinforced. So coming to the actual amendments, Chairperson, we are now starting to be very specific. When you look at Section 2 of the bill, which relates to Section 54A of the Act, it deals specifically with the appointment of municipal managers and acting municipal managers. And it relates to the point that has just been raised by Councillor Stockton. Let me present to you the practical challenges that we find. So what the current bill states is that a municipality will go through a recruitment process. Ultimately, the panel, interview panel, will make a recommendation to council on the appointment to be made. council will take a decision to appoint, the municipal council will take a decision to appoint a senior manager. What the Act then, or also this bill requires, is within 40 days of taking that decision, the council must inform the MEC of the appointment made and detail the processes that were followed in making that appointment within 40 days. The bill then goes further, it then says the MEC must, upon receipt of that communication from the council, must inform the minister within 40 days. And then it goes further, the bill and currently stands, it then says the MEC must within 14 days assess whether the process that was followed by the municipality is in line with the guidelines provided both by the Act but also by regulations. If the MEC, the bill of the now, if the MEC fails to do so within 14 days, the minister may do so. Minister Kofta then has that authority to assess whether that municipality has indeed executed the recruitment process in line with the legislation. Our reading of the bill as it stands is that there is no reference to concurrency as a word, but also a second point that we have is that we may not be on the same page of what concurrency means. We have done an assessment of relevant legislation, and then one particular clause which we draw on that defines concurrency, and you find it in the upper limit notice for the remuneration of councillors, and the concurrency is defined as prior to a municipality implementing, there must be agreement from the MEC. That's what concurrency is defined as, meaning that a municipality cannot implement until the MEC says, I give you the authority to do so. Now that is not what it is meant in the bill before you. There is no clause that says, municipality prior to appointing, I must concur, meaning I must give you a go-ahead. It does not provide for that. So in our view, concurrency does not apply on the appointment of senior managers as the bill currently says, and it's been a problem in practice, because whereas municipalities held this position in line with the legislation, MEC has held a different position. And in our view, it was outside of the legislative framework. A further problem that Mr. Francis specifically said we must raise in the committee, and we will give you the exact example that happened in the Eastern Cape, is fortunately not us today, in the Eastern Cape. A council decides in July, well, in June, to make an appointment with effect from the 1st of July of that year. It takes the decision, it communicates that decision within 14 days to the MEC. The MEC responds in December, so 6 months late. The MEC responds and says, well, we are not in agreement. You have not followed the process. We have concerns. So the person has been employed for 6 months. In a municipality, a person was appointed as an MM. 6 months later, the municipality is now asked to rescind their decision. They proceeded to take that decision in January of the following year, and that matter is now before the court, because the person feels that the process that unfolded is not in line with the legislation. And those are the practical challenges that are presented by non-adherence to time frame, certainly. Because in our view, there's a reason why the 40 days are provided for. So that if there are any issues, there is a sufficient time span within which to take the necessary action, if action is to be taken, before you get long into a person having been employed at the university. unless we will make a proposal how we think this should be addressed, but certainly from our view, there are practical challenges that we have found in the past on the implementation of this particular provision that also finds expression in the bill before the committee. The second area I would want to draw attention to is the area that relates to section 3 in the bill, but it relates to section 56 in the main act. Again, relates to the appointment of managers accountable to municipal managers. So what the bill currently provides for and what has been implemented in since 2011 up to, in fact, probably up to date, is that senior managers are appointed by council in consultation with the municipal manager. So the practical challenges that we have experienced is that there is a blurring of the lines of accountability. So because council appoints a senior manager, do they account to council or do they account to the municipal manager? And we have seen certainly in practice the abuse of that clause as it stood there in the act and as it now stands in the bill, that senior managers, they bypass the municipal manager who is the head of the administration and they directly engage with councillors, whether it's members of the mayoral committee or whether it's the mayor directly. And it has created challenges in some municipalities where the municipal manager feels that he is the head of the, he or she is the head of the administration, but from an accountability point of view, those that should be reporting to him, they use and abuse this clause to report politically into the same principles that the municipal manager should be reporting to instead of through the municipal manager. So in our view, we have a proposal we would like to make to address the challenge, and it is to reaffirm the fact that a municipal manager is the head of the administration, is ultimately accountable for what happens or what does not happen in a municipality, and should be able to make the necessary appointments so that when he's held accountable, he does so because he has made those or she has made those appointments within the administration. We'll come to the specific recommendation we'll make with respect to section 3 as it stands in the book. The next section we want to focus on is section 5 of the bill, and it relates to, again, section 56A of the Act, and it relates to what is what also discussed earlier this morning, the limitation of the political rights of municipal managers and managers accountable to municipal managers. So it was extensively discussed this morning, but essentially what the bill does, it removes what it limits a MM or a senior manager from holding a specific office in a political party. Practical challenges we have experienced is that this limitation only applies to senior managers. So the example that was presented to us during our consultation with Councilor Stokiller has indicated, we will present you with an example, but we'll take a step back to put members of the committee a bit in context of where this thing comes from. And we suggested this as far back as 2010, and COFTA agreed that it is a challenge, but it arose from research conducted by Sauda around the political administrative interface in municipalities. And there were a number of challenges raised, and in fact specific example given, and we want to give you a specific example so that members of the committee can understand why this was introduced in 2011. So this is what happened in the municipal council meeting. A municipal manager is presenting a report to council. writing the report and during discussion, it became fairly clear that council is not going to agree with the recommendations in the report. The municipal manager writes a note to the speaker and says, speaker, convene caucus. Municipal manager writes to the speaker and note, please convene a caucus. The caucus is convened, but it goes to the respective caucuses. The municipal manager goes to the caucus, but is going to the caucus wearing his political hat as a chairperson of the political structure in the region. And he said to councillors in the caucus, you will go back and you will agree with those recommendations in the report. Yeah. Those recommendations presented by the municipal manager, you will go and agree with it. So it's the same person holding a different cap and they're giving an instruction. And then when you walk out of the caucus, you put on the other cap and get to the council and allow the municipal manager. That is an exact example that was given to us in the research. And there are many others. Because of municipal staff members holding political positions and using political positions to advance their day job in the municipality. And that specific example, that's why we saw this introduction. And we have certainly been quite pleased because we have seen a change in the administration, because at least there's one problem that has been removed. And it has made certainly a positive impact. However, the difficulty that it presents to municipalities as you speak, and they're really the exact example that was given to us. So municipal managers are saying to us, well, the difficulty is that the limitation only applies to us as senior managers. But what happens to me as a municipal manager when I come to work in the morning? I park my car in the parking, and when I get out, I see a driver at the municipality. So I work, the employee, the driver at the municipality. And he comes to me and he says to me, Chief, you're going to get to your office. There is a memo on the table. Please approve that memo. And that driver is now speaking as a branch chairman. So the difficulty that municipal managers are facing is that they can't hold political office. But officials junior to them can hold political office and use those political office positions to advance what must happen or not happen in their administration when they themselves are employed in their administration. So we are presenting to the committee the worst case scenarios of actual experiences that find expression in practice. And the view of Sarada, as our comment, is if we are serious about professionalizing the local government sector, as was recommended by the local government center on strategy, central to that would be to address this problem once and for all, and we have an opportunity to do so. We will make the recommendation when we deal with the recommendation part of the presentation. But also, Chairperson, we want to respond to what we have picked up this morning as a potential risk that is being raised by the committee, and we are responding because we took the liberty of securing a legal opinion. The legal opinion was a knee-jerk reaction to the legal matter that went to both the High Court as well as the Constitutional Court and was earlier raised on the substantive position of whether this clause infringes on the constitutional right of senior managers as it stands to be politically active. So we have sought a legal opinion, and the legal opinion we would suggest maybe the committee must do likewise if the department has not done so already. But our legal opinion concludes on the following. It says, yes, Section 19(1) of the Constitution provides for your legal, your right to be politically active. But Section 36 of the same Constitution provides for the limitation of those rights. And if you look at the criteria that is provided, the court act, four areas that are provided specifically, you must assess whether those four areas of limitation will indeed master the challenge of whether you are infringing on the rights. Our legal opinion concluded that it does not. So we would invite the committee and COFTA perhaps also seek legal opinion that that will clarify whether this particular provision indeed impinges on the rights of individuals to be actions. Our concluded no, it does not within the context of the limitations of Section 36 of the Constitution. On the next area of the bill, Section 6, which relates to the employment contracts of senior managers, we have seen interpretation challenges over the last 8 years, and the interpretation challenges relate to what the bill does and what the Act did in 2011 was that prior to 2011, councils, because there's a specific provision that the term of office of a municipal manager cannot go 1 year beyond the term of office of the council that appoints him or her. Prior to 2011, council could extend that provision to the senior manager, meaning council could appoint also the senior managers not 1 year over the term of office of the council that appoints him. What this bill does, it removes the extension of that provision to senior managers. It only applies to municipal managers as it currently stands in the bill. The confusion that has been there, and both Cox and ourselves have communicated on the matter, but the confusion that remains within the local government space is whether a council has the discretion to appoint a senior manager for 5 years, meaning linking it to the contract of the municipal manager and to the term of office of the current council, or whether it can appoint such a person on a 10-year or even a 15-year contract. Here is an opportunity for the committee to rectify that challenge, so specifically providing if there is a view that there should be a discretion given to council to appoint on a permanent basis or on a contractual basis. Here is an opportunity to rectify that so that there is certainty that is being created, and it is not up to a SAUDA or a COFTA interpretation on what should essentially apply. So Chapter 7, those are the specific areas of the bill that SAUDA have comments on. We have raised what the challenges are related to those particular exceptions and currently stand, and would want to move on to the last part in making recommendations to all of the governments as they appear in the bill. So we are in agreement with the definitions that have been introduced under clause one of the bill, so we support, fully support the amendments on clause one as proposed. On clause two that relates to the appointment of senior managers, we would want, if there is a view that the 14 days that are provided for an MEC to respond whether a municipality has duly complied with the processes, if that 14-day period does not suffice, what would be an appropriate period? And except now, it is 14 days, but we have seen in practice not adherence to the 14 days, but we have also seen in practice a reading of concurrency which does not find expression in the book. So we support the current amendment of 14 days because we do feel that it's sufficient time to avoid challenges in the municipality where the NAC holds the view that processes were not followed, so that the municipality could at least respond within a month of making the appointment instead of responding within 6 months and becoming problematic for the municipality. So while we support the 40 days, we are also open to discussion on whether the time frame to be given to MNCs should be reviewed within the context of particularly the issue raised by the Eastern Cape, that maybe the work to be done by the MNC requires more than 14 days than what is currently provided for. On clause 3, on the appointment of senior managers, meaning managers reporting directly to the municipal manager, within the context of the accountability concerns we have raised, we want to suggest that the clause is amended to read that the municipal manager appoints senior managers after consultation with council. So we are just reversing the roles. So instead of council appointing in consultation with the municipal manager, we are saying the municipal manager, proposing the municipal manager in consultation with the council in appointing those managers that would directly report to him or her. On clause 4, the appointment of acting municipal managers, we did not raise specific challenges in our earlier slide, but perhaps to indicate what a challenge is that in many municipalities, the appointment of an acting municipal manager is delegated or retained by council. It is not delegated to a mayor to make an appointment in between council meetings. The difficulty with that is that where a municipal manager falls ill and is incapacitated, as an example, for a week, it is not practical to convene a council meeting to appoint an acting person to be appointed for that week. So there are practical challenges in councils being the only authority to appoint acting municipal managers, and maybe some consideration should be given to what happens in instances between council meetings where there's a need for an acting municipal manager and it is impractical to convene a council meeting. Clause 4, we agree with the substitution of municipality with municipal council, so we support the clause as it stands. Clause 5, on the political rights limitation, we support the proposal as it stands, but we are proposing that the limitation should not only apply to senior managers, it should apply to every single staff member. So we are saying that no staff member in the municipality should hold political office. So they must elect whether they are municipal officials or whether they are politicians. But they should not be both. So our proposal is the extension of that limitation to all staff in a municipality if we want to be serious about professionalizing the local government space. Clause 6 on the employment contract, we support it with the addition that similar to the appointment, it is the municipal manager in consultation with council that will conclude those contracts. Clause 7, 8, 9, 10, we support them as they stand in the vote. So, Chairperson, that is our comment. We are asking that the committee consider the comments and the recommendations as proposed. Thank you very much.
Page by page. The court ruled that the unconstitutional constitutionality, inconsistency and invalidity directly stem from the procedural flaws with regards to the borough not being tagged or categorized correctly. It was therefore invalid for want of compliance with Section 76 of the Constitution, which only meant that it must have been a Section 75 bill rather than a Section 76 bill, meaning it must have been an ordinary bill affecting the provinces and not an ordinary bill not affecting the provinces. With regards to Section 56A1, some will argue that it is inconsistent with the freedom to make political choices as stated in Section 91 of the Constitution. Yet the Constitutional Court ruling did not say that this particular amendment regarding political office was an unjustifiable limitation as per Section 36 of the Constitution. So I agree with all that. No employee should hold political office within a municipality. Then with regards to concurrent being interpreted as approval from the MECs for municipal appointments, being a decade in council, I believe in the authority of the executive. The council has executive authority to appoint. There is other avenues for AMC that he can follow. He can assess if there was any contravention in the process, and he can then apply for the territory order on the validity of the process. Then I have a problem with political allegiance hampering the responsible persons from obtaining the territory order. I have spoken on this 3 times in the House already. National cannot interfere when the province fails to interfere. Yet, I have given in letters from various MECs that told the council, these are my recommendations, get rid of the MM who doesn't have the qualifications and experience, yet the council failed to implement the recommendations of the MECs. Then the MEC should have gone further and obtained the declaratory order as per the Act to enforce compliance, yet the MEC didn't follow up on it. Then the Act makes provision for the National Minister of Culture to intervene through getting a declaratory order. But it seems, and I get a feeling that political allegiance is hampering the process, and there's no appetite to proceed. So I just want to say, and I want to say to our Honourable Deputy Minister, I handed one letter to you, I handed one letter to the Minister. Party allegiance would never be put before the people if we are serious to professionalize our national government.
Yeah. Honorable
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation of the Department of Health and Chairperson, the Honorable before me, who has taken my personal form. I want to understand the form further that in Article 18, who did not follow the procedure of 14 days after the appointment of the new parliament, but she or he came after 6 months. What happened to that municipality? Is it that municipality able to proceed with the rest of the deliverance in the community? Or maybe the issue is before the court, they are still waiting for the court to rule on that matter. And I also further intend to appeal for the 300. But why can't the father recommend or tell the municipality the man assist in the municipality, not say the man assist in the municipality to make sure that the people cannot suffer because of the negligence, because the LEC could not follow something that doesn't contain down even in the constitution. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Chief. The character thing you must ponder on the which we failed to do earlier on to express that our views at this stage change. It's one of the devil's advocates. We hold no particular view at this point in time until all views and the proposal has been put on. But ours is to ensure that your submission to us will stand up to the legal scrutiny, that we have dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. So that when we ask probing questions, it shouldn't be assumed or understood that we hold a particular view. I think that's the part that we fail to actually clear on. So we hold no particular view. Now, the question I have a research by Raymond on the issue of concurrence, and I've consulted my library. Indeed, you are correct in relation to concurrence, because the Act under Section 66(4A) clearly says that after appointment within 40 days, meaning you first appoint and then you inform. They are consulting, they are informing the MEC. And the MEC must also do the same and after 40 days inform the minister. It states that if there are contraventions, then you can apply to court to set that this matter. So if the act as it stands, it acknowledges and appreciates that power lies with municipality. So I think I'm covered in that aspect of concurrence. The second point that I want to raise, Chair, is with regards to the appointment of acting municipal manager in an event where you are unable to convene a council meeting. I think that is covered under Section 69 of Systems of Delegation. Each municipal council is obliged to have their systems of delegation. And I think if you within that systems of delegation, that you speculate in an event where a municipal manager calls it, then these delegations are delegated to certain individuals. I think you should not try and change. Let's rather ensure that such individuality is covered under the systems of delegation as Decision 59 of the text. The issue, I'd like to get clarity because currently, as the Act says, the appointment of these managers is the prerogative of council. And within that process, the issue of selection panel being constituted, which includes members of the municipal council. Now, with the change to say, municipal managers may appoint in consultation with council, you are then also tampering or having to amend the section that speaks about the selection panel to exclude the members of because the municipal manager becomes the chairperson of the selection panel with the relevant MACOM member with its appointment of the director for human rights movement, the MACOM member of human rights movement, he forms part of that selection panel. So in your proposal, it has an internal consequence on other sections within the Act. So those are issues that we need to also take into consideration. How then do we constitute the selection panel? Is that the selection panel will be excluding NACO members of that respective portfolio that will be vacant at the time? Are you saying we should completely exclude council members from forming part of the selection panel if the appointment is done by the municipal manager? If I can get clarity in that proposal. For now, Chair, I will stop on that.
That's Chair. The recommendation to extend the limitation of political rights to all staff members is an interesting one. I'm not sure if we achieve its objective necessarily, but it might send quite a strong message. My question does need an opinion on section 6A. Also speak to your proposal on a blanket prohibition of holding political offices by a municipal official. Can you give us that reassurance, or is it something where, and do you think it's relevant? Should we in fact simply look at a blanket prohibition? The proposal, Chairperson, on giving the municipal manager instead of council the first prerogative or more of the power of appointing his direct reports is also quite interesting. The problem, however, it seems quite difficult for councils, good councils, to get rid of recalcitrant municipal managers. And would this not be too much of a concentration of powers in the hands of one council member? I'm not presuming that it will be, but did you consider the risks of that, considering your proposal properly? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. That is Chair. Thank you. All right. This issue reminds me of what the commander-in-chief of the forces for emancipation in the African continent says about this particular topic. That he even makes an example that, you know, I do not care if you are from, this is this one, from the ANC. I do not care if you are from the DA, you are from the Freedom Movement, and so forth. So long as you have the right skills to get into the right position and deliver. Now, sitting here listening to the presentation, it's the fact that from where we're sitting, certainly there is a problem of political interference and what I call political will to the core. Because you cannot have a situation where a branch member comes in there and just tell an MM what to do, whereas he is employed himself in the administration. Certainly there's something wrong there. I mean, medicine, if there's medicine to remedy that blindness, must be brought about by the department immediately. Because I'm afraid, Chairperson, that at one point then we will come back and say, we are sitting, we are still discussing the similar circumstances. And they say that usually to conquer the mind. So change is painful.
to professionalize municipalities will give rise to a service, quality service delivery. Currently we have a problem, currently we are sitting with a problem. And what is it that needs to be done to turn around the situation and turn it around permanently? Not just turn it around because we consider our people at the center of these problems. And I do agree with what the comments of Sarkar said, that the municipalities must really be professionalized. Because if we don't say we don't do this, we will not be able to get to a point in our engagements to say that what is it that we have achieved. Because certainly we have to have a sense of where we are going. How do we go? We can't be sitting here and be talk shop of the same problems and we talk about the problems and we come back and talk about the same thing. Surely that should be that next. So I think you submit that Jefferson, that we should professionalize and find a mechanism as soon as
challenges of the requirement of contract for the managers directly. They should be accountable to the municipal manager. But I just want Osaka maybe to control, maybe I didn't hear them clearly, but what is written here in our report. We welcome the presentation very well and the good development. But now, they have mentioned that there are specific senior managers that they should maybe it is back in the rank of individuals. So why that happened? Because you mentioned there are four areas. Next. Of limitation. So I want to understand this thing for why they should other senior managers that report to the council rather than to the municipal manager. But I think we welcome all this. Because if we professionalize it, I think they will be the second that we have seen in the last recently in Swan and Johannesburg.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you very much, and the Mayor, Mr. Mahmoud. I had the land of telling you to the compliment, taking away your system with your Mayor. This is an honor that I can have. No, thank you very much for your presentation, and yes, I think it's what we are looking for, just to say that all your proposal is very clear, because we must run away from the situation we are doing. For you are confused if I'm dealing with the mayor now or I'm dealing with an administrator. So the cap must be clearly identified. You want to be the administration, so it means your personal cap is not going to be the one that will determine the job. If you are curious about making differences in terms of the long term. Apart from saying that, I just want to engage you because when we started your presentation, I was responding to my colleagues to say, Chairperson, if you send a Bizana before you allow the provinces, it should have given us the same direction. Because this matter, DM, started a long time ago, in the process of 2010, if I'm not mistaken, when 2020, it's 10 years later. But if you listen to the presentation from SADA, they have a clear background. And the mayor also stated that it's exactly 1 year when they come and do the same presentation. But I didn't read it, which is why he's mentioning that. I don't know if he's irritated because you are coming to do the very same presentation as the year or what. But I understand he's a politician. And he's very careful to say that. But these committee members, why are you asking us to come here? But he was very good to say, even the president himself that was there, was going to confirm that you appreciate the opportunity. Can see that you are talking to a politician. So I'm saying, Babulan, on the recorded statement, you gave a contest. And you said there is a report in 2009 that you identified those five key areas that the report talked about. So, which also, DM, it fits exactly on what we were discussing yesterday in the Control Committee, taking from the AG's report, to say that we have this crisis in the camp, and it seems as if we are saying to the political office, play your role as political head of the institution. But this report talks to these challenges in 2009, 10 years. So the question is, as much as we are very clear, we are very appreciating, some of us were very new to this committee to say that these things that you are still talking about 10 years later, it was identified in a certain report in 2009. So therefore, the way forward is to say, please give us the updated report now. 2009, you identified these five key areas which are some of the challenges that we are faced as the country, and then what have we done? Can be SADA, can be the department, every stakeholder. So give us an updated status report. It will help us also on the actions. You remember yesterday you said the department must come on a monthly basis to update us on the actions that they are going to use as intervention. So SADA must tell us after 2009 report, then what is the updated status? This is one. And then go on to say that professionalization and administrative of local government in section 57 minister of government. I think we're very clear to say that the chart is your proposal. Let us professionalize it. So if we are clear like this to say in our amendment of this legislative bill, we must able to distinguish between the politicians and the administrators. Our problems will be hard to solve. I agree with you. But having said that, I just want to get some clarity here on your specific proposals, especially when you say that on job 3, appointment of managers are accountable to MM, municipal managers. We are proposing that it must be vice versa. So I want you to also to come very clear because this section currently it talks about the consultation. The council appoint and consult. But we are saying that it must be vice versa. So I would just want to get a clarity. What do you mean by consultation? Because to me it seems that this is the same thing. The council appoint in consultation with the MM, but we are saying that the MM must appoint and consult. But it's not the same thing. Maybe it's in English, it's my second language. And then on the, I think it was an issue when you were doing the presentation, and also the mayor also make a comment on which one to bring. Your municipal managers are saying that it seems as if this amendment is directed to us. But when it comes to junior officials of the department, it seems as if they can be a political member, but why do you think it's directed to us, right? So now, at the end of the day, you said no, everyone, even a branch member belongs to the EFF, but now we are occupying an office in terms of the administration. Just that came of being a branch member, you must take it out. So it will also pay the end. We are not dealing with any political calculation. But having said that, because as public representatives, if there is a problem, we must intervene through the policies. It always goes back to the political component of the department now. I always say this, don't have my input. Because we all know, this was the thing here, that there is something that an animal is called political development. This is still taking place at this age. We allow that to happen, DM, under your political leadership, to say that this is a deployment, chaotic deployment. But if that chaotic deployment has happened, we come and cry after that. We say that no, it has professionalized it, but we allow it to happen. So this thing must be balanced between politics and administrative. The issue of the MEC vis-a-vis the minister in terms of those days that are mentioned here, MEC taking longer than 14 days and so on, and the MEC, you can have a regulation that regulates that, because the executive deadline was making to say that 6 months later, the issue of the MEC, 6 months later, the MM has been appointed, but the MEC is coming 6 months later to say that no, but there is some irregular process. That one can't be addressed by us as public representatives through the laws and regulations. It's a political will, because you are the MEC of a political party. You didn't apply to become an MEC, you didn't apply to become a minister. You are deployed or you are appointed politically. So those things need to be addressed politically. To say that we are not MEC in our political meeting. What is this now? Why are you responding 6 months later? Why are you not doing your job?
I don't know, because DM, I know will respond to some of the issues that I'm raising. But I always raise these things to say that maybe we have also to get a feedback from the DM's office. To say that those things that you are raising here, because they are substantive, they are very important. At least to get it to, yeah, we process those things, those concerns that we are keeping. For instance, it's not that I'm making an example to say, we can't have anything that would lead to his or her job and wake up later in 6 months. And there will be no consequences. It will be business as usual. To say that now there is a court case between the department and the MM. Saying that, but you guys who said I'm capable, you got my CV, my application was processed, I went to an interview, and then now 6 months later I was saying that, no, I don't qualify. I'm taking me to court. And then who is paying? Is the very same department using the taxpayer. So it needs a critical intervention in such cases. Otherwise, it starts. We are going to debate this until the cows come home. Let us professionalize our municipality administration. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It has been highly covered by the previous speakers, but only two critical items I would like to get clarity on. On the recommendation on professionalization and administrative stabilization of local government in the following. There is another three there, qualified and skilled staff to be appointed. I believe there are guidelines that are available there in terms of what are the requirements for employees. No matter what, because if a coach hire will continue having the same problem, because when I only did this advertisement, you'll find out if it's clearly
it is clarified what requirements are needed for NM and your Section 56 managers when they, the work is out there. But I don't know whether he has a law or whether he go wrong when it comes to the appointment whereby the advert was created in terms of the requirements. I think the second one, other than the problematic statement, there is this very critical flow of undue interference or something in addition, the very very interesting thing. But there is no recommendation how I'm going to address that. But that is very critical. And that is why it's happening all over in most municipalities.
I'd like to concur on what Umuwang has added to the issue of the
to put a regulation around the time frame of EMPC, because in a COVID chairperson, what will come about? Even if, because I know the regulation will take a longer time, maybe, I don't know whether enough is from the office of GM or the minister. What is it if the MEC is not complying with the time frame wherever we're waiting for the regulation? Because that's where the problem is.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Sure. Thank you very much. I think I'd like to understand the sophisticated administrative questions. But let me start with saying we are operating in what we have to know there is a free market economy, and in the process you see and you have an experience of various parts in the environment. And it is a very funny environment wherein a senior manager appointed in a particular institution has a solid direct line reporting to a board. That's a very funny thing. What is happening in the board environment, in this environment, is that a senior manager has a solid reporting line to an accountant, which is in this case a CEO. Which is the CEO, it would then report to the board, and so on. It's only in the government where a senior manager employed by the council sits down and says, yes, no problem. This issue, there's a challenge of accountability. Like we said earlier on, if Stokely is employed by the council and you want to effect performance to a municipal manager, which in this case happens to be a CEO, and by being appointed by a board, and I take the council as a board, by being appointed by a board simply means you've got a solid reporting line and a dotted line reporting to this board. Which in turn, in a common practice, you will find that the individual will then undermine the authority in the form of the CEO and take wrong or right instructions elsewhere. And they say part of professionalization of the sector, and that's why many institutions have been succeeding very well, because we are very clear in terms of the lines of reporting. And how do you then report? In the municipality, I'm expected after council appointed a municipal manager, we must sign a performance contract. Now this performance contract, I'm also saying to this person, go and meet with Lance. How will I then punish this person when Lance is not performing his duty? And Lance then complains about the municipal manager comes to me. And they say, let us be practical. We are talking about professionalization of the sector and creating a clear, distinct lines of accountability and reporting so that you monitor. If I sign a performance contract with Lance as an accounting officer and Lance signs a performance contract with somebody, if there is no delivery at the point where I need to assess him, I must punish him because he took the wrong decision. That is the issue that we are trying to put here, which is the broadest outlook of professionalization. Later on, I said, Chair, we wish to have other debate on this matter, because we link you to the manner in which the local government was structured and funded in terms of 1998 white paper on local government. And we are happy that the Ministry of Corporate is busy with that, and we are happy with that. Because if you want to professionalize, you need to look into what you have what are you distributing to them, so that they must account on the money for the direction that you are giving them. So that is the one point to us, and that's what we mean by saying a municipal manager must have a right to recruit a person that he or she believes that that person will perform. Then when I sign a performance contract with him, give him a target. And our target in the municipal environment is informed by IGP. I think earlier on I had members saying that met HG. And there are a number of issues raised by HG. I don't think any of members asked HG what might be the possible challenge on this matter. I don't know how to leave it there. The issue here, Chair, is that when we talk about professionalization of the sector, the first thing that you do, you must administratively professionalize it. Individuals then must be held accountable of their action on the basis of the performance contract that we enter into from time to time. I think let me leave it there at that point. I must say, as South African local government, I think the president is sure, yes, Honorable, I mean, said Honorable Mukalim, but Honorable Mukalim, she would say, it is indeed, we are seeing some movement on the side of COPTA looking into challenges that are faced by this policy. And we do appreciate the contribution and the leadership that COPTA has been providing over the last period. Remember, municipalities over the last many years, when there is a witness in the municipality, Section 139 intervention has said it has to be. And the COPTA conducted the task and found that Section 139 has never functioned, and it will never function. You remove five individuals, you take 5 hours of five individuals, you put an individual in an environment where they are still stuck. So I think on our side as an association, we are comfortable with the work and assistance at COPTA. And the new thinking that is coming into COPTA, that Section 139 as a challenge, we had a Section 154 of the Constitution that we are obligated as the other spheres of government to assist municipalities in that. So we are seeing that turning around, which is an association we appreciate. On the issue of the MEC, we've got practical examples. I mean, we can keep province by province. We can name each municipality in a province where an MEC was received. In fact, the meeting is in this way. At the appointment of or recruitment of a municipal manager, council takes a deliberate decision. One of the decisions that we take is say, constitute a panel, and in this panel, it must include the following. It must include the council. It must include the municipal manager, because this individual that you are coming to municipal manager, you must invite COPTA, you must invite SALGA. What is funny to us, what is happening over the last period, is that having COPTA seated in the meeting, panel agreed. They're not agreed to the council. Agreed that Stofield is suited to the qualifier. Remember, seated in the panel, then the member of COPTA is expected by us as a councillor and the councillor in the municipality to go there and brief the MEC. Now, our surprise is that has been concluded the process. We will comply with the prescript of law, notify the MEC about our decision that we have decided to appoint Lance. which to our view is the double up, because MEC representative was sitting in our panel. Now 6 months down the line, the same MEC writes a letter says, no, we disapprove. I mean, to me, it's a very serious, which impacts, of course, on the turnover in the municipal environment. So we are saying it is important that there's different spheres of government that are required by law to support each other. Let us see to it that we support each other, not try to take responsibility of others. And that's what we are saying. And we are happy that this matter will be raised and we continue to raise, including to the MECs that have been doing these things in various provinces where this challenge will be experienced. Okay, I think lunch with Jim, issues of panel. Okay, maybe let me say, in the event that, I think lunch will come in the event that we are given this right and opportunity that the municipal manager appoints the person of his or her choice that should have been qualified for the position, and therefore if we change the whole ball game, it would then mean a panel to be appointed by the MM, composed by the MM, because the person that interacts and recruits the person that one prefers to bring, and then council, it had to play an oversight role. Because council, by definition and its function, its role is to play oversight role over the executive and administrative. And then therefore administrators, in our view, must be given the opportunity to perform the function that they're supposed to perform.
Thank you very much, for members. Quick ones, I think Council has covered many of the issues. We essentially agree with the bill as it currently stands in the processes that will follow post a decision taken by Council, meaning with important days communicated to the MEC, the MEC communicates with important days to the Minister, and the MEC then applies his or her mind on the appropriateness of the process for the important data. And failure to do so, the minister may act. So we are quite happy with that. Because what it does is that we can rightfully assume that once the municipality has communicated to an MEC, 14 days has passed, the MEC has not responded. There's another 14 days given to the minister to act. Once those days have expired, we can correctly assume that the appointment was indeed made in line with the process of the no response given. The absence of not being able to assume that creates chaos within the local government space. And as I said, reaffirms the position that it now gets Mr. President into legal battles where there's late communication. So we think there's sufficient check and balance, particularly with the role given to the minister to act in the absence of the MEC acting, where there's indeed some weaknesses in the process that was followed. But perhaps to explain the recruitment process, indeed there are two different panels that would apply for the appointment of a municipal manager vis-à-vis the appointment of a senior manager. Key difference is that for the municipal manager, the mayor or executive mayor is the chairperson. For a senior manager, the municipal manager is the chairperson. But for both of them, as it currently stands, the recommendation coming from both of these panels must go to council. What we are suggesting is that, yes, for MM, it goes to council. But for senior managers, the appointment, what the MM will do, will send a report to council saying we have followed this process, the outcome of which is recommending X, Y, and Z. Council will pronounce itself, that's not an appointment. The MM is consulting. And Costa was, they are very good at reminding us about consulting. And we agree with them on this part. What consulting means is very good at telecast. Consulting means we discuss with you, we give an opportunity to present your views. If we are happy with what you are suggesting, we should be considered or not considered. That's what consultation means. So it places an meaningful manager in a position where if he makes a recommendation through the panel, outcome of the interview panel, council, and council changes the panel decision, he or she still has the authority based on our proposal to say, well, council, I've listened to you, but these people at council software are saying, they're going to report to me. I'm going to be accountable for what they do or not do. I will consider your view, but make a decision as your choice. That is what we are essentially saying. And that's where the key difference will come in, between the current and what we are doing. Thus, the opinion that we have obtained on the constitutionality or otherwise of the limitation of the political rights extend to everyone else, yes, because it would also apply to everyone else. Same position would apply, what? The same legal position that has been advanced by us would also apply to other employees in the same manner. Will we make the municipal manager powerful in giving the authority to appoint senior managers? One is accountable. Ultimately, what happens or does not happen. So if the people that he appoints are failing, he or she must be held accountable for the failing of the people that he or she has appointed. So I think it's less about power, it is allowing a person to execute their responsibilities and, as is required, to assemble a team that will assist him or her to execute that particular responsibility. Chair, I think I've covered the addition to the council so far.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not properly empowered or convinced with the response. Because as stands, it's clear if managers that are directly reporting to the NL, and I'd like to give a standard practice that serves the many boards. There are certain positions, level 1 to 4, that appointment is done by council, executive directors. And it does not take away the right of the MM for holding them accountable by virtue of him not appointing them. So I want to get an understanding of what are the challenges with the fundamental differences that make it want to change with this. Is it only the issue of appointment? Because there is no way in this act that because you are appointed by council, you disregard your MM and report directly to us. It has never happened like that. Political immaturity and failure to understand the legislation. I don't think the sins of certain individuals warrant every time that we change the legislation. Otherwise, we, from time to time, we face with the issue of changing it. One separate incident happening there, let's change the legislation. We need to deal with the character of the individual, but we cannot do that through now and then changing the legislation. If there's something fundamentally prohibiting the functioning of the MM, I'm just asking for clarity. I can also be convinced that indeed it warrants the change. Secondly, Chair, the issue of the composition and the appointment of the selection panel, as it is stated in Section 12 of the regulation. You said, yes, the MM will have to appoint. But the composition also changed. I did not get that part. Will the composition exclude councillors completely? Look, the current situation in Chair is that the MM will be the chair of the selection panel. So we draw this thing, show this thing, screening, and then bring only suitable qualified candidate to council for consultation in order of preference. They won't just bring Ubey who does not even feature in terms of the criteria. If out of 20 there were 3 who are eligible and qualifying for appointment, they will use as number 1, 2, and 3 to say out of these 3 they are all eligible to be appointed for this position. But our first preference is number 1. In the event where number 1 is not available, number 2 can also be still considered. You're not going to include someone who is not eligible. So that is my understanding with the current provision of the legislation. So I would like to get an understanding what then becomes the fundamental objective that warrants you to change. Have there been not isolated incidences, but a lot of incidences where things were not implemented as per, and that limits the right of MM to hold, because even the performance is done by the municipal manager, the court to counsel in terms of the performance of the manager. So if I can just get a clarity, so that we apply our mind accordingly. We don't want to object to the subject.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you very much. I'm the legal advisor. I wanted to respond to that, but I see Sal also wanted to, so I don't know if I must come after that, but maybe just because you gave me the floor. What we have experienced, and I'm not talking from
experience
within the local government, but in other places, where there's an appointment authority. Where there's an appointing authority. The dispute or the questions is the council or the municipal manager. Well, that appointing authority is also then responsible to answer whatever complaint there is. So if there's a challenge in CCMA for unfair labour practice or these things, it does become a problem if the appointing authority is not one person. And especially in a council where you might have divergent views, you might have opposition to a certain appointment. But the council as a whole will be accountable for CCMA issues as well as performance management issues. So that is what we've experienced in other places to be an issue. And where it's actually easier to hold a person accountable, a single person accountable for that appointment. And I'm talking about the parliamentary service specifically. In parliamentary service, it's the second to parliament is the appointing authority. So any problem that I have, I go to court and I can cite the secretary of parliament. If there's an issue with my performance management or if there's an issue of harassment, it's the secretary of parliament that is answered. If it were to be the House, the question would be, who represent the House? Do we have legislation in that regard? We have in the case of parliament, I don't know about local governments, but in the case of parliament we have the speaker that will answer on behalf of the House. But does she get a mandate from the House? She's supposed to. What do you do with opposition parties? You say, we actually support the person claiming against you. So that kind of challenges arise. It's not insurmountable. It's just much easier to have a single person being held accountable for the appointment of a person as well as their conditions of service and whatever performance management must happen during that service. I just thought it might be helpful for the discussion. I might not be able to solve it directly, but yes. So, if you allow me later, maybe I can say something about the 56A amendment. I'll get back to it after we've done it on the instructions manager.
Well, but the same argument will arise with the appointment of the MM, because it's council that appoints the MM. So, are you saying your argument does not arise when it comes to the appointment of the MM, because it's council that appoints the MM?
Chair it arises, but then it's only that one employee. But it does arise, the same problem. What we have with the second Inter Forum is in our case. The second Inter Forum is appointed by the houses. So he needs to deal with this issue at that level. All the rest of the parliamentary service will answer to the second Inter Forum. So that, as I said, we don't solve the problem. We try to minimize the issues that come out of it. So you have the one person who's accountable to the political head, who's now the secretary or the accounting officer, the municipal manager, and then everybody underneath that person answers or is accountable to that person. So one sees often in legislation that the minister must appoint the head or the accounting officer of a regulator. Think of financial institutions, and that regulator, that person that heads the regulator, then financial service conduct authority, must appoint other people, and those people answer to him. So it's trying to deal with that practical challenge. But that is how we've dealt with it in other legislation. As I said, we can do it either way. It's not unlawful, it just creates practical issues.
One quick response, Chair, is the first one is that We are not suggesting any changes to the panels. So the interview panels remain as is. Remember, they make recommendations ultimately. Where we are saying there's a key difference is on the appointing authority. So whereas currently, as suggested in the bill, the appointing authority for all senior managers resides with council, we are saying only for municipal manager or city manager resides with council. Everyone else should reside the appointment appointing authority is the municipal manager. And that's the key difference between what is in the bill and what we are suggesting. The appointing authority. Let me give it to an example. I agree with the view that there would be a recommendation on three possible candidates, but they are prioritized one, two, and three. And there's a key difference between one and three. And the reason why they are. So if council says three and the municipal manager says one, if the municipal manager is the appointing authority, he can appoint one. But if the authority is council can give him three. Number three, and he would have wanted number one. To execute his responsibilities that he will be now accountable for through his performance management. That's a key difference. But they are in order of preference. And there's a reason why they know what
I'm sorry to avoid dialogue, but what I was trying to drive home is that you would not recommend anyone that is not appointable or that cannot perform a function.
That's what I was trying to drive home.
But I get your point of saying the key order of priority and preference. But what we do not want is to give one individual too much power.
Thanks, honorable member. I think honorable has an observation that he's trying to make the case for anomaly is correct. In an ideal environment, we would work on a basis that council and the four councillors are accountable to the authority. The executive is accountable to council. The administration is accountable to the executive, and the administrative leadership has authority over the entire administration of the organization, and this appointment and accountability process should function normally. Practical experience suggests that it hasn't always happened. It has political interference or political overreach. In certain instances, there are practical experiences where also holding political office, people in the administration, then undermines political representation. So the system gets complicated. And as the minister said last night, then we can't unscramble the egg, because now it's completely scrambled, then we can't unscramble the egg. In the spirit of anecdotes, there are also anecdotes here in the spot manager, upwards number 5. And these environments are not supposed to be normal. It's supposed to be that, in fact, processes are followed to the T, and everybody functions in line with their respective responsibilities. But our reality is that it is different. The ideal, I think, is that we're going to legislate as far as possible to allow the system to mature, but over time we're going to have to reverse some of these things that we are legislating for that are anomalous. Our other reality is that, in fact, council, as opposed to provincial and national legislature, council is both the executive and legislative body. Now that complicates life completely, because the constitution says so. But then legislation also extends to them, provide original executive powers to the executive mayor, which necessarily could be in conflict if you take it to its logical conclusion. But our reality is that we have to create a legislative framework to enable us to manage an environment where we can have efficiency, harmony, and accountability in municipal administration based on practical experience. I think that the suggestion by Salga that we might at some point want to re-look at the whole range of issues in a much more comprehensive way is quite valuable. We might discuss time to the extent that we need to fine-tune where there are certain contradictions, but also try and create a degree of certainty about who is responsible. But I was making the point about the council being the executive body, because in fact, a member of the mayoral committee, unlike a minister of an MEC, is not an executive authority. Now, we're trying to operate in an environment where it looks the same, but in reality, they're not an executive authority. And when they're not an executive authority, you can't expect them to do certain things. Now, say, but you have to work with this head of department. If you have to work with them, at least participate in the process. practical experiences suggest that even that is very, very difficult. From practical experience, I can say, as a member of the mayoral committee, it's possible to issue an instruction that conflicts with that of the municipal manager. And nothing about this instruction necessarily is irritable. It is simply that we are giving different instructions on a similar matter. And there are managers who are struggling to interpret as to, so who do I approach and who do I account to? But you can't always legislate for everything. So I think that as the committee applies its mind, the issue is to try and legislate to limit the number of problems that we encounter on the basis that this is not, it's an anomaly. It shouldn't be normal that these things happen. But the reality is they happen, so let's try to legislate and allow the system to mature so that in fact we can function in the future in a normal way. I think I should also make the point that we also don't have authority over MEC. Except terms of Section 100, where there is evidence that you said they're not acting in line with their political intention, but otherwise you don't have operational oversight over the daily activities of the NEC. But to the extent that the NEC might act in a manner that undermines their political obligation, you need to invoke constitutional provisions that don't have specific regulations that have constitutional obligations to enforce. So far the practice has been that we try and resolve these matters in an amicable so there is engagement. Some of these issues sound like in minimum meetings to say that they have a one, two, three chamber meetings, but that's done in an amicable way as opposed to being a situation where we issue necessary instructions to a and that appreciation of what the president for constitutional framework provides for is very important because it also can create the necessary checks and balances but also holds the appropriate body accountable for decisions that are made in particular context. But I'm not suggesting that to the extent that these matters are of concern that there aren't mechanisms to deal with them. The only matter I'm raising is that we can't necessarily deal with it as an institution when we say you are accountable to answer it. It doesn't necessarily work.
Thank you.